Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is August 30. Am I right? Yeah, August 30.
Yep.
Summer's it's over, bro.
Yeah, man. This week, you know, I got up. It was like a smooth, like 63.
Word.
64. I was like, oh, word. It's gone, baby. It's
word. Leaves on the ground and shit. Like, damn.
Yeah. I mean, it's Fila Valor time for me.
Word. Right, word. Yeah. I mean, today and tomorrow is supposed to be real nice. I mean, the weekend actually be pretty nice. Like, you know, nice, like 80s.
Yeah.
You know, sunny, you know, cool at night, but like all that 90 plus something, I think that's kind of. We left that behind last week, and it's over with, man.
Yeah.
You know, we'll probably get a couple of Indian summer days like we always do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll get a couple of those. You know, you'll get a September, middle of September day where it's like
88. Yeah. Shit. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You know, maybe even one October day where it's like 80, 85, 82, but then it drops off the cliff. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it just sounds like some old black man shit, but it do feel like the summer went by quick. I don't know.
Not for me. I've always broken down summer in an 8-week period. You know, you're saying July, August, because
you don't count June.
I don't count June. June, the kids are still in school. So it's school up until like basically the end of June.
True.
That's so
true.
I never really counted June as a real summer month. Like I really count sort of maybe that last week going into
July 4th.
Yes.
So basically, Essence Fest starts the summer.
Pretty much for me, like that's really, you know, maybe a week or two before, and then I usually go like a week or so after Labor Day in terms of summer for me, and then after that, like it starts to get, you know, it's a wrap.
It's over, yeah. Once football season starts, like even if it's kind of nice outside, I'm not considering that summer no more.
Yeah, even like my thing is when my pool closes.
Once
put the tarp over the pool, baby.
It's over, baby.
It's a wrap.
It's done. Yeah, so for Naya is out of town. She's actually on vacation in Mexico, somewhere in Mexico. I don't remember where she was going. But she's down there in Mexico. I think she comes back this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, peace to her. And I hope she's getting a good tan and drinking a gang of tequila and eating a gang of tacos. I think we talked about this last week, though. But, I just kind of keep seeing it more and more. It really feels like, you know, I don't know, Mexico and Greece feel like the new black hotspots.
I think they are because I don't think that they're very arduous trips. And
yeah.
I think that plays a role in it. Like, the problem I've always had with some of those trips is that I don't really like entire travel days.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of them.
Yeah.
So that's why I've always sort of stayed in, you know, I try to stay under 6 hours.
Yeah.
And Greece is really not that far. I mean, if you're going to London, you know, I mean,
yeah, a couple more hours.
What the difference is, what, another hour or two?
Yeah. Maybe two hours.
Really about what, a 2 or 3 hour difference between going to LA. It's like, it's not that big a deal. They've obviously made it more convenient.
Yeah.
And they've probably Americanized. You know, the thing that I have learned about traveling as an American is that we are, when we're not catered to, like, we kind of make that known.
Yeah.
And our standards are not in line with everyone else's standards,
yep,
good or bad. So, you know, I think that they've made an effort to get that American dollar.
Oh, they definitely have.
Yeah.
Because you remember, like, what, 2 to 3, I don't know how many years ago, but fairly, fairly recently, like, you know, Greece was on the brink of, like, financial disaster. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so, it, you know, and I doubt it's, like, fully out the clear yet, but you can see what they did was they fully, I think they had the Olympics, I guess I don't look yet. It was, I think maybe 12. But they had the Olympics, and then they turned up the heat crazy on the travel and the you know, and having people come over and visit the country and expose the fact that, you know, to most of us dumb Americans who didn't really know, I think up until fairly recently, we thought of Greece as like just Athens and the ruins.
Yeah.
And not didn't realize that there were like, it's made up of like a, I don't know how many, but like a whole lot of different little islands.
Yeah.
And those islands, obviously, like they have this really beautiful water because it's in the Mediterranean. So they have this really beautiful water, and they have different islands, which kind of like, there are some islands that are a little more chill. They have islands that are a little more party-ish. And the hospitality here, you can see they put a big focus on it, like, and made it probably like the flights a bit more affordable than maybe they were at one point. And, you know, kind of the hotels jumped in there, and they really have turned their whole country's financial, you know, stability around. It's been interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at countries, I've always pointed to Jamaica because that's mm-hmm. where we go often, and that is where they have mastered tourism as probably the biggest financial support of that country.
Absolutely.
Right. So when you look at how you can do that, if you have the weather, you know, if you have the beaches, the people will come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hospitality is a really, really big thing. We don't necessarily do it well outside of a few places in the States.
Yeah, we really don't.
Yeah, Miami clearly does it well. New York, obviously. LA, obviously. You know, the big five.
Chicago in the summer.
Chicago, yeah. Chicago all year round, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, you know, out of maybe, like, the top five or six cities, like, after those top five or six, like, you're struggling when you go to, you know, the middle of nowhere, Texas, right?
Yeah,
like, you had a fucking Days Inn, and if you could get some eggs that are freshly made, you win it.
Yeah, you came up.
Yeah, so other than that, you know, outside of Houston, you know, maybe Dallas, you know, people just don't do it well. So it's great to see that, but, you know, also see people being able to take advantage of that. I don't think the trips are price gouging. I don't think
they're
killing people. And listen, man, you know, you get to go somewhere fly, you get to taste some different food. Their menus, I'm sure, are incredible.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
A lot of times when you go to places like that, you don't have, they don't really operate with a lot of preservatives in their food. Like, their food isn't sitting around.
No, it's fresh. It's fresh. Very fresh. The fish is really right out the water. Literally, yeah, they might have caught that like an hour ago.
Dude, there's a place in Jamaica that we go to that we literally, the guy catches the fish, right?
And you literally bring it up to the plate.
You pick out your fish.
Straight up.
How you want it.
Wow, the joints are swimming. Like, give me that one.
Dude, they catch the fresh fish that day, that morning.
Uh-huh.
You come in for lunch, you go by the thing and you pick out your fish. Yeah, I want that one. Do it this way.
Yeah.
And boom, in like 10 minutes, your food
your
is
joint,
at the
your joint is on the plate, yeah. And I'm saying this is the travel section of the Popeye podcast. But I'm also saying that to say, like, everything we're saying about Jamaica and, you know, Greece, I think is really applying to in this case to Mexico as well. And not that Mexico has always had travel and stuff, but I really feel like with the clown in the office and how he's kind of tried to dog Mexico out and dog the Mexican people out, to me it feels like one of the byproducts of that is the country ramping up the tourism even more, you know, and making like Tulum become a hot spot, and obviously like Cabo on the western side, and like I've mentioned a few weeks ago when I was in Cancun, how they're like turning that around as well. And yeah. I've even seen them trying to turn up a little bit on Mexico City to make it, because it's, you know, it's a lot of culture in the city. It's a huge city, so, you know, you gotta really kind of know where you're going, because you could go into some dark places. But I'm just saying, like, it seems like that's kind of like been a positive byproduct, is when you go to a place in Mexico, like, and the people are great and they really treat you well.
Yeah.
You know, they really treat you well. They're really friendly. And it's, you know, so it's a beautiful thing. The talk was said, bro, because I'm going to get a different pair of headphones because you said I'm breaking up a little bit.
All right, we could just pause it.
I'm ready.
Okay.
All right, cool. So let's jump on into it, man. We're going to do like a more man's version of the Popeye podcast as Nye isn't here to add the femininity, as they say. Do you have a couple things. Football starting the next weekend? It's the 8th, right?
Yeah, it's usually like that Thursday after Labor Day.
Yeah, so I think it's starting next Thursday. Have you been watching Hard Knocks at all?
I mean, I watched the first episode. I just wasn't that enthralled with this season.
Yeah.
With the season's choice. And then the first episode, you know, the whole, you know, Richie Incognito shit just kind of, you know, turned my stomach a little bit. You know, AB, God bless him, you know, great wide receiver, but a little annoying.
Yeah. I mean, I've been watching it, of course, because I'm a Raider fan.
Yeah, that's your team. Yeah,
that's my team. But it, like you said, the show's the four. I guess it's up to episode 4 now, I believe. And it's all been Richie Incognito was only on that first one. He was on a blip on another episode, but they haven't really covered him since that little introduction, him and AB. It's really been like the AB show. Like, it's all been about him with the helmet. Is he practicing? Yeah. Is he isn't practicing? Is his feet good? Is his feet bad? It's been the AB show. It's obviously been the John Gruden show, who is, to me, totally playing up for the cameras.
Yes.
And you know who else? Who hasn't? Derek Carr a little bit. But interestingly enough, who they haven't shown at all is Perfect. Vontaze Perfect. Like, they showed him like one time in the first episode, and he was just kind of standing around with a bunch of other linebackers. But since then, nothing. And you know, usually like in the other Hard Knocks, they show the guys like with their wives, they show the guys like at home, you know, kind of talking to their father, their parent. None of that. They've done none of that this season. It's been all just John Gruden, is AB practicing? Is he not practicing? Like, it's been kind of weird. But the one thing I will say is our merch this year is amazing. Like some of the hoodies, some of the tops that has to wear, and I'm like, okay, I need to find out where I could buy that shit. Like, you know, it's just been incredible. That's kind of been the highlight to me, is like what they're wearing.
Oakland's always, the Raiders in general is probably, if I had to guess, they're a top three merch. I'd probably say behind the Cowboys, maybe behind the Steelers.
Yeah.
They do well in merch, always have, no matter the record, so that's irrelevant.
Easy because it's black. You know what I'm saying? So you kind of wear it with anything.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, I think that the production has gone a little different maybe recently, and I think that that's probably due to, I hate to blame everything on social media, but I think with social media, it puts people in a much, much more guarded position than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people are very reluctant to put their families on TV. I think people are very, there's something to be said, I mean, about wives and parents and all of those people who are really close to players. People kind of know, but they don't necessarily like to wear that on their sleeve. They don't want to not be able to go to the grocery store and not hear about, you know, their kids, you know, fucking up somebody's fantasy.
Exactly. Yo, your son's fucked up my league.
Yeah. So all of that, you know, all of that being said, I think that HBO is probably going with what they can get. And I think a lot of people also don't want to expose their families in ways that just doesn't benefit them financially, right? Like, I don't think that they're getting paid when they come into, you know what I'm saying? So people are like, fuck that. Like, if you taping me at work, tape me at work.
Yeah.
Like, there's much more church and state with professional athletes now, more than ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, they keep it very separate. So, you know, I don't know what kind of season. Hard Knocks is really also a hard determination about how your team actually is or isn't, because it's just, you know.
Well, y'all cut Ronald Ollie the first episode.
Yeah, they cut Ronald Ollie. Yeah, exactly. But Ronald Ollie, I mean, the way they explained, he was lazy as shit. Like, he was lazy. He got hurt in practice and didn't, you know, do the thing with that the – you know, professional sports, especially football, likes you to do, which is kind of play through the pain, he kind of was like, my shit hurt and I'm not playing. And they were like, well, then, because he was kind of a low draft pick anyway. He's like, well, then, you know, ain't no reason for you to be here.
And well, I think mostly it wasn't just to play through the pain. I think the issue was that he missed his treatment.
Yes, yes,
like,
yes.
Like, you can't not show up to your treatment appointment and say, I'm hurt.
Yeah.
It's got to be one or the other. Yeah. And you know what, dude? Like, you're a grown-ass man. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on social media, and of course, in the very last chance you weigh, you know, that's not, it's not really what it seems.
Yeah.
This out.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Like, we all get it. There's editing in a television show. We understand that there's parts of the conversation that aren't going to be exposed.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do know is that your lazy ass did not get up and make it to your training session.
Nope.
Nobody that's going to be there to crack the whip. Like, you're a grown-ass man. Every phone has an alarm. You're in a hotel where you can schedule a wake-up call.
Exactly.
Like, stop fucking making excuses, dude.
Exactly. And nobody picked him up, so... Yeah, there it is. So, yeah, speaking of that, I know we never really got a chance to get into it, but the latest season of Last Chance U, we never really got a chance to talk about it.
We didn't. They're following Independence Community College over in Independence, Kansas.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry, Independence, Missouri.
It is Kansas.
Independence, the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
Wherever they at.
Exactly. Okay.
And then they follow Jason Brown in his second year with the kids that, you know, he's recruited, the kids that he's brought back, the kids that have decided that they're going to come to.
And for those who don't know, Jason Brown is this white college coach who was born and raised in Compton, California. So he's got this, like, he's this white guy who's got, like, a lot of, for lack of a better term, like, kind of black mannerisms, and he only listens to black music. Like, Charlie Wilson is like his favorite artist, and like, he curses literally every other word he's cursing at somebody. So he's kind of like this white guy who grew up in a black neighborhood, so feels like because of that he kind of has a black card, but in my opinion has a lot of racist tendencies regardless of that. But
you know what I think he, I don't think his mannerisms and his, like his desire to sort of be around the cultural part is fake. Like, I think he genuinely, like, I think he fucks with Charlie Wilson, right? Like,
real. Yeah.
But I also think he plays it up. He just shucks it up a little bit, and it feels a little caricaturish.
Yes,
at times.
Yes, yes.
Like,
yes.
The suits and that, like, dude, like, it doesn't feel authentic, and I feel like he plays it up because he wants to show how down he is.
I grew up tough, and you know what I'm saying, and all that exactly. Type of shit. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah. So they're up in Independence, Kansas. So like last season, they won a national championship. That was his first season in the.
Did they win a national championship?
Oh no, maybe they didn't. But they were ranked pretty high.
They were ranked. They were ranked, but they had a winning season.
And okay.
They did well, but they didn't. I don't think they won the national championship.
Oh, you might be right on that. But then they did well, and so he's coming back for season two, and it's very interesting because you see a lot of the effects of last season, him doing well last season, and him being on TV last season on Netflix. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's kind of really more what this season was about, was really more like the effect of him being this kind of like F-list celebrity, and how it's affected like his coaching and his coaching style and the way he treats people. And it's almost like a little science project in a way to me, you know?
Yeah, to some degree, yep.
And so, you know, blah, blah, blah. The season goes on, and he's basically just a total tyrant this time, way worse than last season. Like I said, every other word is a curse, motherfucker, motherfucker, and it's a constant, like, he's almost, for lack of a better term, yo, he turned into like a little junior college Donald Trump. He coached purely by fear, and everything was all about him. And you guys are here because of me, and you're playing it because of me, And if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be shit. And fuck all you motherfuckers. I'll cut everybody. I'll fire every coach. I can't be fired. I'm the best. It's all about me. I can coach better than any of you. And needless to say, they lost like what almost every game this season.
Dude, it was a fucking meltdown. It was the most, honestly, that might have been the most incredible season based on circumstances that I've ever seen. Yeah. Because you're watching a college program go up in flames right before your eyes. It was amazing television.
It really was.
I could only imagine what they didn't put in those episodes. I could only imagine the shit that ended up on the cutting room floor. Like this guy is a terrible, first of all, I don't think he's a great football coach. Now, let me also preface that by saying I've never played organized football. I have played organized sports, and I do know what being a young man playing a sport is and what coaching can do, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I get that football is a little harsher, but the guy never actually teaches the game.
Never.
Like, his only, like, he's screaming, he's yelling, he's never actually teaching the game. Like, they're not really learning anything from him. The way he handles his coaches, who are basically, you know, living, you know, these guys are fucking living on the dorms, they're sharing apartments. Like,
yeah, one coach got his whole family in a dorm room.
And they are all the way grown. Like, these niggas got families, bro. Like, this isn't like some 22, 24 year old assistant. And I get it, man. Like, this is a passion. This is a man's career, and they can probably, you know, do well in life. And this is what they want to do. And so as a family, you know, sometimes you make those choices, man. But like the way he was firing people.
Yep.
He was, you know, the way he dealt with Malik Henry was just very weird
and weird,
strange, and just unbecoming of a man, right? Like you cut a kid via text. Like, that's like, is that someone as a father, as a man, as someone who is trying to ensure that their child is not just learning football, right? Because look, God bless those kids at Independence. But like, for the majority of those kids,
nobody going pro.
Yeah, they'll probably go to a mid tier D1 school, and you know, you'll play maybe, you know, maybe not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
But honestly, dude, in the last four seasons, I think the only person that has caught on to a team has been Dakota Fanning.
Yeah, him and the kid. There was a kid that went to Texas Tech. And got caught, I think, guess he maybe did some drugs, something stupid. And he's playing now, I believe, in Arizona. He's a D-back. Okay. He's a D-back. We have only a couple of them.
But I've seen people, you know, sort of justify, oh, he's got so-and-so many kids into D1 schools. And I'm like, dude, that's a bullshit stat, okay? Kids are coming to Independence, Kansas, and they're already D1 talent. They just simply don't have the grades. They're choosing to go to that school.
Yep.
And they're probably choosing to go to that school because it's a loosey-goosey atmosphere and they can do what the fuck they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't
that good? And they don't really have a lot of expectations. And so they just go in there to pass the time. So to suggest that he's taking kids that would have never been D1 prospects or low D1 prospects and, you know, getting them spots in fucking Alabama and the SEC and Power 5 conferences, like, stop, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And listen, that's perfectly fine. No one's saying everyone that's playing on Saturdays is going to play on Sundays. Like, we understand that. But, like, don't make it seem like this guy is coaching people up and he's making people great. They're not. They're fucking
terrible. Like, he's fucking Father Flanagan.
They're fucking terrible. He's a clown. And they eventually had to get him out of there.
They fired him. The whole town turned on him, basically.
Well, also, man, you had the issue with Bobby Bruce.
Yeah.
And like, you know, again, man, this is a kid who And I say this with all sincerity, man. I don't think, you know, Bobby, in my opinion, did not belong on a college campus.
No, absolutely not. Not
that kid seems to have significant issues with comprehension, with learning. God bless those teachers who are trying to and seem really smart. Like those did not, those, you know, Miss Pinkard, I think her name.
Yeah, the black lady.
Black lady. And then there was a white lady that she was the English.
Yeah.
And I loved and I wish I would have seen more of that because she was, you know, on those kids in a way that was not overbearing and not really motherly, but like really trying to instill some level of confidence because like, yo, you can really do this shit. Like stop. You know, not doing your best because
stop shorting yourself.
Yes, exactly. You're shorting yourself. Like you can do better than this, and I know you can. And you know, holding their feet to the fire and things like that. And then you know, you have this issue with Bobby, and Bobby seemed hell bent on making a life of, you know, I don't want to say a life of poverty, but just a life of street life cycles.
Yeah.
Was what Bobby seemed like he was going to be destined to be. And unfortunately, you know, Bobby had a hell of a ride to even get to where he was.
Even get that far, exactly.
You know, and God bless him, and I hope he, you know, figures it out. I don't think he's a bad dude, but I think he's like, right on that line.
Yeah, like, he could either – I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up, like, being, like, you know guy who gets like a job that he ends up working for 30 years and kind of coaches football for kids sometimes, you know, on the weekends and football season, or he ends up getting locked up for 10 years. It could go either way, and neither one of them will shock me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Neither one of them will shock me. Yeah, but it was just interesting, like I said, it was an interesting season to kind of see. It was like I said, it was really like a social experiment more than about football. It was just about how the last season kind of changed people, some for the better, but a lot of them for the worse, including the coach, who's like, I don't even know this guy's ever gonna get another job.
Honestly. He shouldn't. He actually should not be working.
Yeah.
In athletics, in my opinion, I don't think he is. I mean, listen, if you guys want to throw him a job as a pro coach on some low tiered level, that probably wouldn't shock me. I don't necessarily know that it's gonna register with those guys. But that guy doesn't – he's not – to me, he's not a college coach. And he's I'm not even saying it in a way that – he's not polished enough to be a college coach. He's not good enough to represent a university. And, you know, I don't think he has the record on the field to, like, make you look past that shit. Like, you could do all of the dirty shit that comes with college sports when you win it, okay?
Exactly.
Because Tarkanian was doing all the dirty shit.
Everything.
In LV. Like, everything you can imagine. All right? But guess what? When you go in, you're going 31-0.
Yeah, we'll take that.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. When you're going, you know, 14 and 18. Nah, yeah. You got to get the fuck up out of here.
This is a gots to go situation.
You got to go. You know. Did you see this thing about Forever 21 shutting down? Possibly found for bankruptcy.
Yeah, I did. I saw it. I read about it a little bit. You know, look, man. It's brick and mortar, man. Brick and mortar.
Yep.
They don't have a great online presence.
Which is shocking because they tend to sell clothes to a pretty young audience, demographic rather, Urban Outfitters, and it seems like some of these stores that do sell to these younger demos don't really have the online presence that you would suspect them to have.
Well, I think that's, I mean, just the experience, like literally going on there to buy something, it's not a very easy process. I've tried to do it for Jordan
twice. Okay.
It's not. And then the thing about stores like that, like people would rather go into a store because you can usually, like stores like that deal with a lot of returns and a lot of
true
issues. So you never know what you're going to get inside the store. That's what I always tell kids. Like sometimes you have to physically go into a store and go through the racks because you never know what you might luck up on.
True.
So you also get a lot of that. You know, and I mean, this stuff is everywhere. There's nothing distinctive about Forever 21's clothing, right? Like, it's not even like, say, it's the Gap where it's like, you know, denim, and you know that, like, that's their thing, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not even, you know, Express, you know, you get these sort of poorly made shirts, but, right, like, they're these bright colors, and they have all of this pop to them, and even with H&M to some degree, right? Like, there's a look and a feel specifically for those clothes.
Yeah, Zara.
Like Forever 20, and Zara's like the fancier cousin of H&M, right?
Yeah, like the European cousin.
Yeah, the Euro cousin, right? And so Forever 21 just feels, you know, it's a little dated, you know? Yeah. And I don't think they need to close as much as I think they might just need to readjust.
Yeah, rejig.
Like, for example, there's within, you know, I'd say within 10 miles of me, 10 to 12 miles of me, like, dude, there are two stores. Like, there's no need for two Forever 21s.
Yeah.
Within such close proximity.
Yeah, in
my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't think they're going to shut down, but I think they are going to close some stores. They'll rejig. I'm sure they're probably having meetings literally as we speak about how to try to somehow turn up the online presence. And you know, we'll see where it goes. I wouldn't put a stick a flag in them yet. But like I said, these brick and mortar stores are getting killed by, you know, the Fashion Novas and some of these other kind of brands that are online only. And this is, you know, this is where people go now. This is where kids go and adults go to shop. And, you know, unless it's kind of a, you know, sometimes people still do want to go out there and actually touch the fabric. But in a lot of cases, you know, if you kind of know your size and know what you want, and it's not, you know, not anything like a suit or something. It's, you want like a t-shirt or a hoodie or whatever, you know, you just click, go point, click and go. But, you know what I'm saying?
You know what's, but that's what I found very interesting is that I, you know, and I get that I'm older, right? But like, you can't really tell a lot about a piece of clothing sometimes online. Like,
no.
You can't tell like the quality of fabric unless you have a brand that is identified by a level of quality.
Yep.
If I go online and I'm buying a new brand, right? I don't know. Like, I know what Brooks Brothers sells.
Yeah.
I know the quality that I'm going to get from Ralph.
Yep.
For me particularly, right? So I know I don't have to necessarily touch that because I might have already had that shirt or I'm buying, you know what I'm saying? I know what that quality is going to be. And I think that also, too, with Forever 21, like, dude, like, nobody's paying full price for any of that shit because it's always on sale. Like,
always.
There's never a reason to go into Forever 21 and feel the need to buy something with a sense of urgency, right? Like, because again, I'll go in and my daughter now, she'll be like, nah, I'm gonna just wait
yeah.
like 2 weeks, I'll come back.
It'll be down 50%.
Dude, it'd be half off, 30-40% off. And that's how she shops.
You know? It's interesting because also with a lot of these bigger retailers haven't figured out is a couple of things that some of the smaller ones do. Number one, the sales in the store and then the sales online are not really always the same. So it's real confusing. Like, wait, what? Like, online it was 30% off, you know, and with this cold, maybe an extra 10 on that. In the store, it's 20% off. So, like, it's also very confusing. About, you know, what you know, when they do sales, like, what's what, because it doesn't mirror. And with some of the, like, I shop on this site called Grailed a lot, and which is a men's site. They have a lot of, you know, all kind of different, you know, clothes, a lot of high-end stuff you can't find anywhere. But what the genius of Grailed is, like, it's a barter system. So say there's a shirt on there for a round number that's $200, right? I can, but it has an offer thing. So I can click offer and say, I'll pay you $120 for it. You know what I'm saying? And then if the guy accepts it, then it's 120. So it's kind of, they're not like waiting for things to go on sale. And I noticed that eBay has adopted that. Yeah. eBay now has a offer thing too. They got that directly from Grail. So like these all these kind of like little things that people are now used to doing. Like why I'm gonna pay full price, or why I'm even gonna pay the sale price? I see that shirt. It costs $100, but yo, I'd rather pay $35 for it. And if I send a guy a $35 offer and he's just like, fuck it, take it. And I'm like, bet, I got this $100 shirt for $35. So why would I even bother dealing with all the other shit? So like, I think they're going to have to, a lot of these brick and mortar stores on their sites are going to have to rejig a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
To get people, because people are being trained to shop differently than the previous generations, you know? So you know, we'll kind of see what happens with that. Yo, did you see this thing about the news reporter calling your man a gorilla?
Yeah, I watched it.
What'd you think about it, man?
Listen, I thought it was weird that he said, yeah. when she initially made the comment.
Yeah, he agreed with her.
And I say it was weird, but, you know, I understand, you know, people often say what they would do, and it's usually in hindsight, right? Or it's usually always not when they're in that situation.
In the moment.
This man is in the moment.
On TV.
On live television, right? Like, mm-hmm. So he probably froze. He probably did some shit that he probably regretted immediately. Look, I don't know that lady. If I had to guess, I don't necessarily think that she was saying it in the context that we know it to be.
Yeah.
But that doesn't excuse the fact that she said it.
Yep.
And what I also found very interesting was that I would have loved to have been in on the conversation when they had made her come out and apologize, and why mm-hmm. they needed to put him out there. Yeah. And I felt like that to me was more the insult than anything.
More egregious. That yes. He had to sit there.
That was more egregious to me, because not only, because what they were really doing was painting her as the victim.
Yep.
And he became her support.
Yep.
He was propped up out there in a way that was specifically designed to basically take the heat off of her.
Yep.
It was basically saying that this guy has forgiven her. He's okay with it.
Yeah, we're gonna, everybody else should move on.
Yeah, we're gonna move past this. And that's what was just sort of, that to me was really more egregious than somebody saying an off-the-hand comment. I mean, he knows her clearly.
Yeah.
So I don't, it seemed to me, I don't think her apology was, all the fake tears and shit like that.
Right.
It was unnecessary.
I just have to say, I'm so sorry. You're one of my best friends. And meanwhile, they've known each other for like 18 months. Your best friends after 18 months? Really? Yes.
So I don't believe that. I just think that dude was in a weird position and a weird predicament. But you know what, man? I ain't got to pay his mortgage.
Right? Exactly.
I ain't got to put food on his table, and I ain't got to worry about where his kids going to school.
So yeah.
He made whatever decision he felt was necessary, but I hate the fact that they put him in that position to have to go out there and basically be a shield. So not only did he take the sword, he then had to be this white woman's shield. That was what was crazy.
And then now it's like, you know, they both look to be pretty young. I mean, I'm about to say they're both 30. About 30 maximum. You know what I'm saying? Like 29, 30 maximum. So this is, I don't think this is either one of them plans on this being like their last stop on their way to, you know, TV news, you know, what fame or whatever it is. But it's kind of like you said, like the way it's spun, it's great for her. Like she said the shit. He became a shield. She cried her white woman tears on the thing, and she'll move on to, you know, probably another market, a bigger market, and be known as, you know, the girl who, you know, had to go through so much and,
oh, yeah,
you know, dug deep. And meanwhile, him, he's, you know, in Oklahoma.
He's like, going to be at that goddamn station for the next 15 years.
Yep.
And going to be getting them punk-ass 3% pay bumps.
Yep, and watching these white people blow right past him, going to different markets, and he'll be known as the guy who, you know, got called the gorilla and yucks it up all the time. Like, I hope I'm wrong, but it wasn't, you know, like I said, it was, you know, it was, like I said, I think I liked what you said, because it was obviously the controversy was that she called him, you know, said he looks like a gorilla, but the real controversy was that they made him sit out there and used him to prop her up, and now she walks away scot-free, you know? Yeah. That shit was kind of crazy the way it spun out. What do you think about this whole thing with Popeyes running out of chicken sandwiches?
Say that again?
What do you think about this whole thing about Popeyes running out of chicken sandwiches?
I thought it was, you know, I initially thought it was a manufactured shortage. I'm still not totally convinced that there's not some level of manufacturing this shortage.
Yeah.
But some folks did, you know, make some points to me on Twitter that were really, you know, it's just saying, hey, man, they didn't really expect the demand. And
yeah.
They didn't have the ability to sort of turn around with the vendors, you know, with the providers of chicken.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I get it. And I thought that it just seemed weird to me that they wouldn't have been, you know, the Popeyes is not like a fucking rinky-dink brand, guys. Like, yeah. This is not, you know, I don't understand how they weren't able to go to distributors and be able to at least increase it. Even if they couldn't keep up with the demand in general, that they should have been able to have more. But, you know, look, man, the people wild out, you know, and just were going crazy about this fucking sandwich.
Niggas is fighting. Niggas fighting in the store. Niggas jumping through the drive-thru window.
I want to say this, too, and I said it on Twitter. Anybody that's fighting at Popeyes, they were hell-bent on fighting, okay?
No doubt.
Whether it was going to be the Popeyes, whether it was going to be the deli,
yeah,
it was going to be the corner store, the gas station, okay? Niggas jumping through drive-through windows.
But chicken.
They hell-bent on doing that. And yeah. I'm going to keep it a buck. A lot of that shit was for show.
Absolutely.
A lot of that shit was niggas know they were being taped. They knew that. It was just being dramatic for the sake of being able to be online.
That shit was definitely a lot of that shit was for show. You know, like you're fighting. And think about it. Like, the average Popeye, I don't really go to Popeyes, but, you know, the few times I've been, the average Popeye employee's age is definitely, like, 25 and under. Like, they're kids in there. They are really young people in there. So, like, you're coming in as a grown adult fighting a 23-year-old kid because they don't have a chicken sandwich that you want. You look stupid and ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? These are children.
There was one clip that really sort of tugged at my heart. This young man.
Oh, that one I know you're talking about.
Filmed, and you know, basically, man, they were calling him stupid.
Yeah, slow, and they're rating him. Yeah,
and I don't know if the kid might have been, you know, whatever it was, man, it really got to him, and it fucked him up, man. And the kid was like to tears, man. The kid, this is like a kid, man.
Yeah, like, yeah. He looked like he might have been in high school.
That? Like who? Does even if it wasn't just a kid, but like this is someone at their job, man. Like imagine just you at your job and motherfuckers are just calling you stupid and there's nothing you could do about it. You just gotta sit there and take that shit.
And he's doing the best he can. Like he's like, yo, look, I can only give you the sandwiches as fast as we can make them. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like they stockpiling 400 sandwiches in the corner and they just not handing them out. It's like, you're going this hard and berating this somebody's child because he was a kid.
But what I've learned, man, is that over, especially with social media again, what I've seen is that there's more instances, and maybe there's not more instances, maybe there's just more people filming them, but it seems to me like there's an increase in abusive behavior to service workers.
Absolutely.
In a way that is just sort of like real fucking creepy, man, and real disgusting. And it's really an indication of character, man, that you would sit there at someone's, like the fact that you couldn't even wrap your head around the fact that you can, that's the crazy thing about Popeyes, right? Like you can see the people working. Like you can clearly see that no one is sitting on their ass. And guess what? Even if they are, they're fucking entitled to a break.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I was in Cold Stone the other day, and I got upset because I'm on the line. It's like a fucking half an hour. This girl is like on her phone and shit. And I had to kind of back up on myself Because I was like, dude, she gets a fucking break. It doesn't matter if the line is long. You know what I'm saying? Like,
let her call her mom or whatever.
Whatever. Who knows?
Or whoever, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, and clearly I didn't go off, but I'm saying I can feel myself getting annoyed and getting angry and feeling like, why is she taking her break right now? The fucking line is out the door. It's ice cream. It's not like this is some shit that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's ice cream, guys. Like, yeah. It's a sense of urgency when you're purchasing ice cream. The long and the short of it is, I understand that people get impatient. I understand that people also have lives, and we also, all of us have bad days. But when you are attacking people, calling them names, behaving in this way, that's a character flaw. That shit ain't got nothing to do with chicken, my nigga. Like, you behave that way because that's in your character.
Yeah, exactly. And back to your earlier point, I do think that they kind of got caught out there with the, because, you know, it's basically compacted. Their whole inventory got kind of like swarmed upon in about 2.5 weeks period. But I do think that they decided to also hold back as they're making new shit and figure out ways to maybe distribute this product differently. And of course, raise the demand on it by like holding it back for a little bit. Like,
yeah,
it's a huge corporation. These are people with like MBAs in marketing. You know what I'm saying? They know what they're doing. They know how to. They got caught out there on this. Obviously, it was a good caught out because they made a whole bunch of money in a short period of time. But like, they're planning in big meetings and big corporate offices on how to do this thing moving forward. They're not just fucking around. You know.
Yep.
So I think this whole Popeyes thing is, like I said, it's just interesting. Interesting thing on another interesting take on how social media can, take something and make it a phenomenon, and there's really nothing a corporation can do. It just kind of happens organically. It's just like lightning in a bottle. You can't, like, they couldn't have bought this merch, this much exposure. You know, they couldn't have, you know, they couldn't have come up with this campaign. There was no campaign.
And this is what I always, this is also too, man, like, all of you fucking, like, I'm sick of all of you niggas with this, y'all should be doing this
for black businesses.
And like, first of all, there are black franchises, you know, yes, that own Popeyes.
Hank Aaron owns several of them.
Yes, right. And then in addition to that, man, like, niggas want a chicken sandwich, bro. Like, it's get okay. The fuck out of here with that shit, man.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, let niggas, like, as soon as niggas start to enjoy themselves, there's always other niggas that gotta be like, why y'all having so much fun? It's like yo, nigga, I wanted to taste the chicken sandwich, man. I said it's not gonna like kill me. It's not gonna stop my life. It's not gonna,
yeah, man. Like, niggas acting like we repealed the fucking Voter Registration Act, the Civil Rights Act, the 64. Like, nigga, relax. It's a chicken sandwich.
Yeah, it's not gonna destroy my bank account. You know what I'm saying? I'm all right. You know, me and my old lady want a chicken sandwich. We're going about our business.
Word.
The fuck. What do you think about this whole thing with DeMarcus Cousins? So DeMarcus Cousins, is, you know, for those who know, is an NBA basketball player. He's been playing in the league for a few years now. He's really, really good. He's had a lot of injuries over his career. He's a tall, 7'1" guy, so he's had a lot of injuries that have kind of slowed his game down a bit from what he was earlier. But he's a really highly skilled basketball player. He's also, like, been in, you know, not really trouble off the court so much up until now, but on the court, he was very demonstrative. He used to get a lot of technical fouls and get kicked out of a lot of games and had a bad reputation with the referees. I think some of that earned, and some of that the referees just being dicks, but whatever. But this past week, he was on the Golden State Warriors this past season when they lost to Toronto. And then this past week, some audio came out of him and the girl he had a son with, arguing because he wanted to see his son. He was getting married when audio was being taped, and he wanted his son to be in at the wedding. And the girl he had the baby with was basically saying no and kind of chastising him about it, like, go shoot a ball. And he's like, yo, please, you know, let me get my son. I'm asking one last time. And then the last time he asked her, she said some other slick shit. And then he said, yo, I'm going to put a bullet in your head next time I see you. She put the audio out, obviously, to the shade room and all that shit, as they do. And now he's got a warrant out. I don't know if he's turned himself in, but he has a warrant out for his arrest for a domestic, domestic terrorist threat, something like that. So what did you think about all this?
So a couple things. One, like, this isn't, okay, this was not some random idle threat.
Yeah.
This was a very specific and clear threat to someone.
Mm.
So I couldn't really wrap my head around the fact that people were trying to, like, kind of justify it.
And they were saying it was her fault because she was talking. She was egging him on, for lack of a better term.
And we have, I don't know who this young woman is. I do know that the kid is 7.
Yeah.
I follow sports. I would probably say I'm slightly more than a casual fan, but I'm not a diehard fan. I've never seen DeMarcus's cousin, DeMarcus's cousin with his son. I'm not suggesting that he is a bad father or doesn't spend time with his kid. I'm just saying I've seen a ton of other NBA players with their kids. Mm-hmm. They've all figured out a way to figure this shit out. Okay. Yep. The kid is 7 years old. How and why he's calling her, 2 days before to make arrangements to have his kid at his wedding is just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
We don't have any context of this conversation prior.
Yeah, because it's only that little clip.
So we've got to make, we don't have to make, but we're making judgments on basically a 45-second phone conversation.
Yep.
That's been posted by this woman. And that 45 seconds, we know that she said she's not letting her son go. We don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But then we hear a man clearly threaten her.
Yep.
Like, specifically threaten her. Like, this isn't like, wait till I see you, which is like a vague threat, but not a specific threat.
Yeah.
If you understand what I'm saying? So I'm kind of bugged out on the reaction of people calling her bitter, of people calling her all sorts of, they calling her everything but a child of God.
Mm-hmm.
And making it seem like this dude was, I've seen the word baited, and she's just being bitter because he's getting married, which still may be very true. It doesn't change the fact that dude threatened her. And apparently when she made the claim, when she sent this over to the police department, she has said that he's choked her before.
Now,
I don't follow, I'm not a shade room follower like that. That's no shots to anybody who is. I'm not on Lipstick Alley. Like, I don't, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, I'm cool. But I don't think people know this girl to be making all of these assessments and judgments. He's never been out. Like, they weren't living some sort of very public relationship.
No, not at all, actually.
And that's kind of my point, right? Like, I don't know what their situation is with their kid. Like, did dude just wake up one day and be like, nah, I want my son to be here, put him on a plane. I don't give a shit if he's in school or not, or what, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nobody knows the details.
But I do know you can't make that fucking threat.
Not that, okay? Especially not that threat. I'll put a bullet in your head.
And I do know that all of these niggas that are out here dick riding and justifying this nigga, I know that if that was your daughter, you'd be hot on that nigga's ass.
It'd be a different story.
And if that was your niece, or if that was your sister, and all of you niggas out here that are sitting up here, one dude was like, oh, he was just talking shit. I'm like, nigga, I got like Craig. I'm like, nigga, where you from? Where they talk shit like that, nigga?
Yeah, I'm going to put a bullet in your head, and you're supposed to be like, oh, I ain't worried about it.
You know where my mama stay? You know where your mama stay? Like,
exactly.
What part of the game? Like, dude, I've had moments of anger. I've had moments of, being sort of really upset.
Mm-hmm.
I've never said anything like that. Like, shit is so unfathomable to me.
Yeah. I'm going to put a bullet in your head.
I'm going to put a bullet in your head, my nigga. Like, and you just thought that was, and let me just say, if I had to guess, this is definitely not the first time he said this.
No, because he said it real calm and easy.
He said it calm and easy, and I think that was a part of the reason she was taping that call. So We can make all of the excuses in the world for him. We can try and justify and do all of the mental gymnastics that we want to do for him. What he said was fucking gross. It was it should be reported to the police, and it should be taken seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. My thoughts on it when I saw it was, you know, I mean, again, I'm not in this position. You know, first of all, I'm much older than these guys. I don't have the capital that these guys have. But I also just think that a lot of these young, not just NBA, NFL, whoever, a lot of these kind of pro athlete guys, even more maybe other young guys who might come into some money, you can see like they don't know how to handle women. They don't know how to handle the adulation. They don't know anything. So like they all kind of go for the same kind of girl. You know, the same kind of looking girl. It almost becomes like a status symbol, for lack of a better term, to have a girl who kind of looks a certain way and then have a child who looks a certain way, which is tends to always be like some super little light skin, you know, curly haired mulatto-ish looking kid. And it's, I'm not, you know, dogging the kids or, you know, saying anything bad about the children, but it's just almost like these guys jump into these really serious lifelong situations with people they don't know. And now you've got a child and this woman, and for life. The kids only, this kid's only seven. If this woman's going to be around in your life forever, B.
So one of my issues was that, you know, DeMarcus is not, first of all, he's not a child.
Yeah.
Okay? He's fucking 29 years old.
Yeah, but say he's like 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been in the league for almost 10 years now, guys. Like he is not a kid who has just come from, you know, the wrong side of the tracks, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, and
just came into some money like last month.
Like this is a guy who has the resources and has the means to do and go to court and get whatever he needs to get in terms of visitation rights and access and all of this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
If he wanted his kid at his wedding, then I don't know why he did not work this out prior to 3 days before.
Yeah, or just go do it legally.
That's my point. That is my point. If you could not come to a conclusion about how you guys' relationship in terms of co-parenting was gonna go, then you should have definitely, because you have the means, you should have definitely hired someone to go into mediation, nigga, you've been hurt for the last 2 years. Nigga,
yeah.
Ain't like you couldn't take the time off of work.
Yeah, exactly. You ain't been at all the games anyway.
You ain't been at all the games anyway, nigga.
Yeah.
So you definitely had time to go do this shit, but again, it is one of the things we have to stop doing just sort of culturally is taking narratives and things that we've already processed in our head and laying it at the feet of shit that isn't necessarily there.
Exactly.
Now I don't know either of these people. Mm-hmm. I can only make the assessment from that conversation. And from that conversation, nothing she said should ever be seen as having warranted a death threat.
Yeah, like maybe, I'm pulling your head.
Maybe the fact that she wasn't letting her son go or didn't want him to go could be the fact that this man threatens her life.
Yeah. Right?
Like, did anyone ever, like, we're glossing over that threat.
Yeah.
And niggas have died in the street for less, far less.
Yeah, and like I said, and even if, you know, to somehow take the threat out of it for a second, and it is, she was, you know, chastising him and egging him on and all that shit. Like I said, at this point, I doubt this is the first time she's done that.
That's,
you know, she knows how to push his buttons, which is why he should have been, like, you know, as a grown man, should have been like, you know what, all right, cool. And then, like, I'm call some lawyers and boom, 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 boom. But like the whole kind of like, you take it down to the bare base, like living in the project street level, was like, fam, what are you like and, you and, play and right dude, into her hands.
And dude, we're talking about a 7-year-old kid. You mean to tell me within the last 5 years since the kid was like two, neither of you have figured that maybe we should deal with some sort of level of visitation, right?
Exactly.
And again, we're all making that assumption that that hasn't been worked out.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah. Maybe, If it hasn't worked out, and maybe it had, and maybe she is violating the court order, I'm a spin it from his side. Then fam, next call is to your lawyer to be like, hey, bro, like, I'm getting married and she's violating the court order. You know what I mean? Like,
dude, that's to me, I'm not saying it's a simple fix. I don't want to be flippant about, I've never had to go through this. I don't want to seem like I'm being dismissive of the fact that this is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am saying is like, you are a man with access. You are a man with resources. This should not be as challenging. This isn't a guy who's in arrears, you know, fucking on his $40 a week payment trying to take his kid, you know, out of school for a week, right? Like, this isn't necessarily the same thing. So it just would seem to me that also, at what point, as a 30-year-old man, at what point does figuring out a way to get the things that you desire, you're able to do that in a way without threatening to kill someone?
That's my point.
Yeah. Like, my nigga, like, how, like, what are we doing here?
You played right into her hands, bro. Like, it's
not even just played right into her hands. It's just like, dude, like, even if that, like, I don't necessarily, I think that there may have been some issues with her. Like, I'm not dismissing those issues.
Yeah, you can tell her tone that she likes to push his buttons.
And,
you know?
But I'm saying the issue that I'm having is that they're being conflated. Like, there are two things that could be true. And threatening to kill her does not bode well for a man who's trying to co-parent. I just can't fathom that, dude. Like, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Like, a man trying to co-parent as well as a man who's still trying to play in the NBA.
Dude, again, my man, the kid is seven. Have y'all not worked this out? Like, what was
exactly.
My thing is, if spending time with your child is so paramount, I can't imagine not having a plan by the time a kid is seven.
Yeah, something in order.
There's something in order, right? Like, okay, I'm off for the summers. I don't, you know, obviously with basketball, I'm not playing in the summertime. Mm-hmm. He's home. I get him, you know, July to, I got to go start training. Or, you know, like, there's got to be some plan. I don't understand it. And we've seen fathers get custody of their children.
Absolutely.
So this is not unheard of. This is not 1984 where basically, you know, a woman had to be, you know, fucking coming into court with a needle sticking out of her arm.
For
the courts to give custody to a father. Like, that doesn't necessarily exist anymore. It's still harder, right? And you have to really prove some shit. And I'm not saying he wants, or it's probably in the best interest of a child for him to have full custody. But I'm saying you're the custodial parent. You're paying child support. There has to be some legal obligation. And you know what? Let me not even say that. I don't know if he's on papers for child support.
Maybe he might not be.
Maybe he just makes sure she's good, and maybe there's no arrangement. And I don't know. But to me, the kid is seven, bro. If you guys haven't figured that out, I don't really, it doesn't seem to me like it's been a pressing issue for either of you.
Yeah, I agree. Real quick, want to mention the VMAs, which were this week past. Of course, I'm, you know, going to, you know, spin it biased because, you know, Missy got her Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award, gave an amazing performance. The crowd was, you know, going crazy. People were really into it. She had a great week, actually, you know, great night and a great week. I didn't really see the show, you know what I'm saying? I just kind of saw her part and then, kept it pushing. I read that the numbers were solid, the same as last year. The viewership, I think, was 4.9 million. I don't know what that means, what that, you know, what's happened since then because of all the YouTube clips and, you know, everything else kind of being shared on social media. Yeah, it was good. It was good, you know? It was good. What'd you think about it?
I didn't watch a big part of the show. I actually was watching the Serena Maria Sharapova match. I didn't go. The kids had gone, and obviously Mona was there. I literally changed the moment Serena did away with Maria.
Yeah,
That was right around the time Missy was coming on. So I watched. Okay. I watched the show from home, and then I made my way over to the arena. I mean. You know, the MTV Awards is not really an award show for me. I'm 43. I'm from Brooklyn, and I don't know.
I don't know y'all like that.
I don't know them at all. You know, that's for my kids.
Yeah,
they get all of that. So, I mean, you know, it was dope. I was very surprised that it was in Jersey. But you know, it worked out.
It seemed to work out.
Yeah, so, but it was solid, and congratulations to Missy. It's well-deserved. Peace to all of the people that have been championing her to receive that award.
Mm-hmm.
I know famously Kid Fury and Crystal's were doing that online, but I also would like to just, and I won't go into names, but I'd also like to acknowledge the team of people that have been doing that behind the scenes.
Yes.
And really getting on the phone with the executives and the people that that make those decisions and championing those causes in a way that I also think was just as, if not more effective than, you know, the online campaigns, which are also very necessary and needed. I'm glad that she got her flowers. She has, you know, really... The one thing I love about her is that if it ain't fly, it ain't coming out.
Yeah.
Like, she has no problem with, like, nah, that ain't it.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
You know what I'm saying? And there's a level of artistic integrity that I think we lost with that generation and that in the generation now. Not to veer off too much, but, like the music business is such a machine now. It's almost factory setting.
Yep.
Right. And so the year goes by, I got to put out a project. And whether or not that project is good or you're feeling it or you're in that creative space, doesn't really matter. You're in that mode. You've got overhead. You've got to go on the road. You've taken a deal from Live Nation. You know what I'm saying? So like there is this machine that operates in a way that is sort of very weird. And I think that she's one of the last artists that really stands in that artistic integrity of like, I'm not putting shit out that I don't feel.
Yeah. I'm not doing it just to do it.
Which is why when you get the sound and then you get the visual, it's so jarring.
Yeah. Because nobody's really playing on that level anymore.
At all.
You know, maybe a couple people, but very few, I should say. I don't want to say nobody. Because, you know, there are some artists out here that are really still putting a lot of energy into the visuals and everything, too. But it's becoming far and few between, you know? Last thing, Dave Chappelle. So Dave Chappelle dropped his special on Netflix, Sticks and Stones. I forget what day it came out. Within the last week. And I watched it the other day. It's been a lot of controversy about the special. It seems to be mostly based on his comparing the use of the F word to the use of the N word, and people writing think pieces about it and everything. But first of all, overall, what do you think about the special?
I thought the special had moments. I thought the special had moments. I wasn't necessarily moved by it, but
okay.
That is what I've sort of learned maybe within the last three or four specials of Dave, is that, you know, Dave doesn't necessarily move me like that. I'm not saying that he's not funny. I'm just saying his comedy is not, I don't laugh in the same way.
Okay.
But yeah, I thought it had moments of really, really great, comedy. What I will say is that Dave, you know, aside from the content, like literally removing the content, mm-hmm. but like Dave has, what I think makes him great is his delivery and sort of his mastering of stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Like how he does stand up is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when the content for me isn't good. And this isn't just about the obviously elephant in the room with the trans jokes and the things like that.
Yeah.
But like, I think that there are times when, aside from that, I think Dave can be awkwardly sophomoric.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, it's just not, I don't laugh the same at that. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I don't laugh the same at that.
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it a lot. I definitely had some laugh out loud moments. Like you said, it, you know, wasn't like I was left for the full, you know, hour or whatever it's on, but I had some really, you know, really laugh out loud moments. And I thought that, you know, his take on a lot of things was interesting. And I think that it's been, what's been very interesting is obviously the special itself was called Sticks and Stones, and which kind of set you up right away to know that he was going to be, you know, going in and, talking about things that are going to be, you know, I guess deemed controversial or people, it was going to piss people off. And he said, you know, at the top, he's like, yo, you motherfuckers, you know, clicked on my face. So like, you know, like you wanted to see this. So then for the people to turn around and kind of write all these think pieces and kind of dog him, it's like, he kind of said you were going to do exactly what you're doing. Like he told you, like, you was going to be pissed off, you was going to write a think piece about it, and now you're pissed off and write a think piece about it. So, like, thinking you're moving him in any kind of way or getting him to kind of see things in a different way is ridiculous, because he's like, I know what you niggas is going to do and say. Matter of fact, I remember the first second joke was, he was like, I'm going to do an impression.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you say that, he's kind of telling people what it was from the door.
Well, I thought that that was pretty, brilliant, and that's what I mean about his delivery, right? So what he does in that instance is that he actually, he literally tells the audience right at that moment that I fucking hate you.
Yep.
Right? And exactly. they are laughing it up.
Yep.
And I have a theory about Dave, and I'm completely talking shit. This is completely me talking out of my ass because I don't know Dave Chappelle at all. Not even a little bit.
Okay.
But I think Dave does, you know, so Dave really walks this line of being sort of this pillar of artistic expression,
mm-hmm.
and then also sort of using, I walked away from $50 million. Because it was the right thing to do.
Okay.
And that's where that's kind of where my conflict is with him. Because on one hand, he says he has these jokes and this really great sort of insightful material. And then on the other hand, he pretends like he doesn't understand his power. So my point is like, either you understand the power or you don't. It can't be, I have this amazing power and I don't want to be, you know, doing some bullshit. So I'm going to walk away from $50 million and then everybody's going to champion in me. And then it's just when it comes to wanting to make these jokes about people that they are expressing that is hurtful, like you're kind of like, nigga, it's just some jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, I just feel like it can't be, it like, where's that middle ground? And listen, I'm not saying that I got the answer. Right. But I'm just saying, it just seems to me like a conflict. And I think Dave also, I don't think Dave really likes the spotlight. I think he had an awakening and some epiphanies when he was away from comedy and away from show business. I actually think he enjoyed that life. I think he also enjoys this life, and there's some conflict there, right? Because in order to enjoy this life, He has to be part of it.
Yeah, you got to come outside.
Exactly. And I think that after a while, very much like with the Chappelle Show, when that stardom and that light gets a little too hot, I feel like he's trying to kind of be a self-saboteur to some degree, to almost sort of exile himself again. To make it so, like, if you notice, he's like, you know, I hate, you know, doing this shit. Like, he literally says that.
Yeah.
And I think that he wants to also sort of have this level of martyrdom with comedians. Like, he's the one who stood for the sensitive people, or he's the one that, you know, and
the one who walked away.
The one who walked away again, or y'all gonna make Dave feel bad about telling jokes that we think are funny. And it's just like, yo, man, like, if people telling you like it's not funny, that doesn't mean that they sensitive. It just doesn't. It just doesn't.
So let's get into that. So the two of the issues that that have come up from the main issue on I guess one of I see like one of the black side is not even the Michael Jackson thing, but he did a breakdown, which I thought was brilliant actually, of LGBTQ, and he did a breakdown of like what each letter, obviously each letter stands for, like lesbian, gay, trans, whatever. So he did this thing about them all kind of being in the car and how the gays treat the lesbians and how the gays and the lesbians treat the bisexuals and then how they all three treat the trans guy and so on and so on. So he did a kind of breakdown, which I thought was brilliant. And I mean, I'm not gay, but like from what I could see from the way outside looking in, it's kind of true, you know? But a lot of people were mad at that. Black people in the LGBT community, Q community, were mad at that. So like, I can't tell them not to be mad because I don't walk that path and I don't live that life. So I don't have that perspective. But it also, to me, felt like, as it does on social media too, it felt like in a lot of cases that, it was some dogpiling, and it also felt like, what the main joke that got people pissed off was, he said that when he was doing his show, he had got called into the office because he had said the F word, and they were saying you can't use the F word on the show, blah blah blah. He said, so he's like, he asked the woman, well, why, how come it's okay for me to say nigga constantly, and he said with impunity, and I never get called for that, but if I say this word, I can't use it. And you know, she says, "Well, because you're not gay." And he says to her, "Well, I'm not a nigga either." And the audience on the show uproars with like a laughter and applause, because it's like, yeah. Now that's one of the social media where people saying, he thought he was being clever by saying that, and you know, it's not the same thing, and blah blah blah. Let me just finish. I thought this was very interesting because I took it as what he was saying is, in reality, and he obviously uses the word nigga all the time, right? But in reality, they're both slurs, and there's no levels to slur them. Like, if it's a slur, it's a slur. So if nigga's a slur and F word is a slur, they should be equally they should be attacked equally. But because, you know, society has kind of spun, this is coming from him, and I agree with a lot of this, society has spun the F word as being almost like a worse slur, and part of that is because white gay men who are still white men and have power and have gotten into these spaces where they can kind of morph and do things to for their advantage. So you can't say that word, but you can say this word. But he's just saying they're both equal. And then you go online, and people are kind of a lot of people, black people, especially in the LGBTQ community, seem to be agreeing with him. And to me, I'm looking at it like, you guys are kind of like almost like brainwashed and don't even realize it, because you're saying, yeah, saying nigga is cool, but you can't say this. That's how I'm taking it, but how you take it?
Well, I took it. I didn't think the joke was all that brilliant, to be honest. I thought it was, I thought it was in Dave's wheelhouse. I didn't think it was an incredibly wild perspective to have. Okay. But I also, I think it's a bit of a disingenuous argument that he's making here to imply that he doesn't understand the context or the colloquial nature in which he's been using nigger. Right? Like mm-hmm. to make it seem like you don't understand what that lady was suggesting here. Right? And it wasn't even necessarily that she's saying, oh, you can't use that word. She's saying you can't use that word because you're not that person. So my question becomes, if there was a white show on that network, would mm-hmm. they be using nigga with impunity? I highly doubt that.
No.
Right? So to say, like, to me, it's a disingenuous argument. There is saying that word is not a hill that I'm willing to die on, is my point. That word is not that important to me, to my vocabulary, to the jokes that I need to make, and the funny that I need to feel in order for me to say it, right? And so I get it, right? Like, maybe this was a part of his epiphany of feeling like, well, maybe I need to get out of this shit, right? Like, maybe that was the beginning of his process. I don't know. But I don't think it was, I didn't think it was groundbreaking. And I think that Dave has, like you said, it's titled Sticks and Stones for a reason. I think this was his last special in his deal. And I think he was holding a lot of this shit and was looking for a lot of this shit to like let loose, but wanted to do it after that bag was all the way secured. Mm. And, you know, I think that that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. Even when you look at, even when you look at some of the previous things, like a lot of these jokes are sort of retreads, man. There's not a lot of new material here.
Mm.
You know, the Michael Jackson bit, and, you know, even, and let me just say this. I don't know Dream Hampton. I've met her. I know someone who's very good friends with her, you know, someone who I love dearly, mm-hmm. who's very good friends with her. So I saw the timeline reacting. I follow Dream on Twitter, and I saw her saying what took place in terms of trying to get Dave to do that special.
Mm-hmm.
I totally believe how she explained it, knowing how, you know, sort of television works. I totally believe what she said. What she said was very on point and on par with how these things happen. I also want to say Dave gets to defend himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that by her saying those people's names in those documents, you know, like almost, and I don't want to say shaming them to some degree, but like basically saying these are the people who dare participate and naming names, that there was going to be some level of backlash from those people, and they have every right to defend themselves, and that's fair. I didn't think he needed, like, that joke wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessary, but I got it. The Michael Jackson shit, it's like, I didn't necessarily find, you know, laughing about, if I was a pedophile, I'd probably fuck Macaulay Culkin.
Like, yeah, I thought that joke was weird. That joke was just weird. I was like, that was kind of weird. That was a weird one.
But this is what I'm saying. That this is what I mean by, I felt like he was trying to push the envelope in a way that is, and let me just say, what I also felt was, because I watched it twice, because I just wanted to make
sure. Yeah, I need to watch it a second time.
I wanted to make sure that what I was feeling was what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of Old Nigga at the Club.
Mm.
And it reminded me of a dude who has gained a massive amount of perspective, who has amassed enough money that money is of no consequence to him, who has some level of being tethered and grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But in that world, none of that shit, like sort of matter. And so he's trying to be old dude at the club. He's trying to relive a part of his past that almost sort of made him great. Like the offensiveness shit kind of was Dave's thing. The Chappelle Show and all of the skits and things like that. Like it almost felt like a dude trying to reach back to kind of relive that. Mm. And I, you know, it was just kind of like, I don't know, man. Again, I'm conflicted because I don't know when he has an hour show and there's like 25 minutes of that show with these really wildly insightful things. And yeah. then there's like these really like crude jokes that you're like, I mean, am I fucking, you know, like, am I watching Andrew Dice Clay or am I watching fucking Carlin here? Like, what, like, it, I don't know.
That's the thing is, I think that's the thing. You're watching both.
But that's it. Well,
you know what I'm saying? You're actually watching both. But that's kind of like what it is with Dave. You're going to get, like you said, that insightful, you know, Carlin and some of these other comedians who like, are funny, but also like, damn, I was really ill when he said.
And let me just say to not to cut you off, but let me just say, I don't think Dave is homophobic. I don't think Dave is transphobic in his real life.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm completely talking shit here.
He kind of plays one on stage.
That's my point. He's trying. This is the easiest flame to fan.
Mm.
Right, that's why it's an easy flame to fan, and he can do it, and so he does it in an effort to either do one or two things: to either push himself off as still being edgy and still being a comedian's comedian,
yeah,
or like two, trying to, you know, basically soapbox people and guilt people into feeling like they're being overly sensitive.
Yeah, like, oh, maybe I am tripping.
You know what I'm saying? And honestly, that was why I thought the joke in the beginning was brilliant. The beginning where he says, you know, you niggas going to try to take everything from me. And he's guilting people to laugh. He's literally breaking down the wall of whatever your hang up is. Like, now I'm almost forcing you to laugh. Listen, when you go to a comedy show, you're already in that mood.
Yeah, you right?
That's why we're comedians.
You're trying to laugh. You want to laugh.
Yes, that's why when comedians bomb, it's so awkward, right? Because people want to laugh. That's why they're there. Yeah. And so he gets that, man. He really fucking gets that.
Yeah.
And Dave knows his room.
Oh, definitely.
He knows where those jokes fly. He would have never said those. He to me, I don't think Dave says those same jokes in a fucking, you know, in a comedy club in the fucking middle of Texas.
Yeah.
In Austin or some shit or somewhere else in the Bible Belt or wherever. Again, I don't, and I could be very wrong, but I think that even if Dave is not a person who is homophobic or transphobic, I think that making those jokes in an effort to tell people that they're being overly sensitive or that they need to let loose is contradictory to the fact that he understands the power that he has.
With the telling the joke, yeah.
With the telling of the jokes. Like, it's almost like, you know, everything is funny. And I'll use this, Sorority Sisters in Love and Hip Hop.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, I, you know, I remember the tweet clearly. Sorority Sisters, basically Love and Hip Hop, except the shit ain't funny now.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he knows, man. He knows where the lines are, dude. He pushes to that line, and I feel like this was an example of him trying to push to the line to either do one or two things, to either, A, ride this whole comedian, we get to say whatever we want to say, shit out, you know, or putting himself back into a level of exile where Dave can go off for 3 years and fucking not be seen, and he can live on his farm
in Ohio and just chill out.
And, you know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't, I don't think, that, you know, Dave goes to events. Dave ain't, like, at motherfucking park. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, you'll see Dave at a comedy club and shit like that, and there were people you know, before these specials, people would see him out. But Dave isn't really of that life.
He's not up in the club popping bottles and shit.
That's my point. This is what I mean about old nigga at the club. He transitioned to a point where I think his comedy is a little more insightful, but I still think it tugs at him a little bit that youthful, unnecessary, not, you know, those tirades and those, you know, being offensive is no longer in vogue.
Yeah.
And he's trying to like grasp at that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, whoever hasn't watched it should watch it, and please send us some emails.
Yeah, I think you should. Yeah, listen, it's definitely worth watching. There's some jokes there, like, and honestly too, man, like the fucking opener, dude.
Yeah.
It was just like, I don't know, man. I just didn't get the Anthony Bourdain. It was just like, it was a lot. It was a lot.
It was a lot. So we're gonna wrap it up on that note.
Yep.
I guess it's a Happy Labor Day, would you say to people or whatever?
You niggas ain't gotta be at work, so.
Exactly.
So, enjoy.
Yeah, enjoy your last cookout.
Word. I told Jordan, man, I said, this is the last weekend for the pool, baby.
Exactly. Get into it, because there ain't going to be none until next 2020.
Yeah, man.
You know? But, yeah, that's it. And I'll be back next week as well. We'll probably be back in studio next week as well. And that's it. We'll wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.